podcast this week. There ain't nothing like a dame. Nothing in this world. Because we're speaking to Emma Thompson, Dame Emma Thompson, star of Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. And also, there ain't nothing like a man who stands next to a dame. Nothing in this world. We talked to her co-star, Daryl McCormack. Wow. All that and more on the movie podcast that, quite frankly, is sick to death of the process and would like the process to be over now. Thank you very much indeed. Cryptic comment. Hello, pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, sad to say, I'm joined by just one colleague of such lethal cunning. Our great big fucking nerd, James Dyer.
Hello.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very, very good.
I'm very hyper-caffeinated.
I can see that. You're drinking a Diet Coke and you've wolfed down some vegan meatballs.
Yeah, and a cookie. Importantly, a cookie, which was maple and pecan.
James eats faster than anybody I have ever met. But it's just you and me this week.
Never mind if you've heard a noise
or a thing. Because,
what's happening?
Because...
Do you remember there used to be three of us that did this podcast?
Do you remember Helen? Do you remember Helen?
Helen O'Hara. Harriet. Her name was Harriet.
Heather? No.
Hayley.
Harriet O'Heather. Hayley.
I'm right here.
Helen!
Hey. I know you. You're so familiar to me. Yeah. Did we go to school together?
I think it must have been. It was about that long ago that I was last here. Yeah, so
wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
I should have told you I was doing that.
Yeah, you probably should have.
But, you know, it's fine. It's fine. We roll with the punches on this podcast.
She's
How are
back.
You?
I'm back.
Helen O'Hara is back. I'm just going to look up what you are.
Yeah.
You're probably on Wikipedia.
I am on Wikipedia.
You have a Wikipedia page?
I'm not on Wikipedia.
So. I didn't put it on there myself.
Unbelievable.
I don't have an IMDb page.
I do have an IMDb page for definite. I'm not sure about Wikipedia. Maybe I'm thinking of Helen O'Hara, the violinist who is...
I'm always
do you play the violin? Oh, no, you play the French horn.
I don't.
Here we go.
Helen's got
a
horn.
Yeah, I do. Look at that. I have a Wikipedia
page. Fucking hell.
Jesus.
Helen O'Hara is a British film critic.
Who hates penguins?
Primarily known for working for Empire, for which she is editor-at-large. Early life. Fucking hell.
Jesus.
I don't have one of these. A wiki.
Oh,
and, you know, again, not to, you know,
no, this is
not to toot my own horn too much. I'm the best one.
I didn't realize how long that page was. There was way more here than
yeah, it took you ages to put it together, didn't it?
O'Hara was born in Port Stewart, County Londonderry. That's right, County Londonderry. There's two strikes already on this page. It feels almost like I wrote this page,
yeah,
but I didn't. In Northern Ireland, she has said that she has always been a fan of film, with one of her earliest memories being to see Return of the Jedi in the cinema, but thought she had to choose a sensible career and so studied law. And there are references for these
as well.
This
is ridiculous.
Career.
Does it mention the Molly's Game review at any point?
There's a quote.
It doesn't, thank God.
O'Hara, you fucking wrote this yourself.
I did not write
O'Hara
this myself.
Studied law and began a career in it, but was unhappy with it and, quote, bored out of her tiny mind.
It's true.
End quote.
And then James Dyer took pity on this poor... penniless barrister and invited her into this incredibly high-paying, rich career that she has.
Whoa. She co-hosts the Empire podcast for Empire. You're in the vicinity of the podcast whilst it is being hosted. Yeah.
I think you used to be on here before you went on holiday, but
you're
now, not so much.
Hey, I was working for some of the time and then I...
A noted gun runner, O'Hara... also traffics people. Is this true?
That's taken a dark turn.
It's a very funny way of putting
it. That's what you were doing.
That's
when
a nice segue.
You've been people trafficking
in the sense that I've been moving people around the UK.
But that's exactly what
Ireland.
A people trafficker does.
Yeah,
they do it illegally though, and under cover of darkness.
Okay.
Broad daylight people trafficking.
Yeah. Where did you traffic these people?
We went around. We went Dublin, Belfast, Edinburgh, and London with lots of interesting side trips. For the very first time, I was able to bring people around Northern Ireland. We went up the Antrim coast. We went to my hometown.
Did you take them up the Giant's Causeway?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Was he pleased?
We went to Annick Castle, where a very kind pod listener gave us a tour around.
Was it Finn McCool himself?
It was not at Annick Castle.
Finn McCool.
In Northumberland. Yeah.
Who is Finn McCool?
Finn McCool's the giant who built the causeway.
My dad used to be in a band called Finn McCool. This is absolutely true.
Well, when we've brought you to Northern Ireland, you have singularly failed to come and see the sights. You know, I just think you're, you know, letting the side down.
It's a big wall.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
I've got a question for you.
Bring it.
When you were out there.
Sure.
Did Miss Marvel air?
Yes. I'd already seen the first episode.
But did it air for like the masses when you were out there?
Yes.
So was, you know, when it was on, did you hear loud tittering across Belfast during this thing.
Oh, we're not doing this again.
This is not me riffing. And yes, of course, this is a callback to the Spoiler Special podcast. If you don't listen to the Spoiler Special podcast, do subscribe at everonline.com/spoiler specials. But it has been brought to my attention that the word bangle is Northern Irish slang for bumhole.
The same, Helen. That is nonsense.
Yeah, so you're saying this listener lied to me?
Yes. No, I think it's possible, but I think it was
local slang. But
yeah,
I don't think
it's in general circulation.
Right.
It's not. It doesn't encompass the whole of Northern Ireland.
And also,
and believe me, we have more than our fair share of bangles in that place.
That's true, yeah. And not in a fun walk, like an Egyptian kind of a way.
Hang on a second.
Hang on a fucking second here.
In addition to her work with Empire, O'Hara contributes to the BBC as a film journalist, including hosting Friday Film Club podcast.
On occasion I did.
Look, standing in for me whenever I was on Friday Film Club for 9 years before they canned me. And
what did you do on BBC Radio Ulster last week?
I stood in for you.
There you go. So the great circle of life, they said,
to award-winning effect. They said, oh God, is Helen back this week? That's what they said.
They actually said very nice things about you.
This needs to be updated big time. In June 2020, it was announced that she is writing a book, Who's She? The Cat's Mother, titled Women vs. Hollywood, The Fall and Rise of Women in Film, to be released in 2021.
Great book. I loved every page of it.
The only thing I can think is that somebody has set this as an assignment for like students or something. I don't understand why it's so detailed.
All right.
But you know, whoever
it's your fans, isn't it? It's the people who listen to this podcast, the crazy people who somehow have taken to you and they have filled out your Wikipedia page. I would like to know why I don't. Why I don't have a Wikipedia page.
Well, I don't know. Maybe nobody likes you.
I realise, having now said this on the podcast, I may have been hoist by my own petard and may find myself...
More likely hoist by your own Picard.
Oh, that would be good. Mm. I'd like to be hoist by my own.
Yes, here's an assignment. If people can write Wikipedia pages as assignments, write me and James a Wikipedia page. But this time next week, make it good.
Yeah.
Make it accurate, unlike Helen's.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And get it right. And your prize will be our respect.
Yes. Yeah. List the many awards I have won during my long and storied career.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh.
I have them all in a big cabinet at home.
Wow.
Huge.
I have no awards.
You've no awards?
I'll give you an award, so. Helen.
Oh, I mean, I have a bunch of certificates.
Sounded vaguely sexual.
Yeah, no, not a sex award, like a Best Helen award.
Oh, that's very kind. Wow.
I mean, you're the only Helen I know, so.
I know another Helen.
Do you? Is she better than this Helen?
She is better than this.
See, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know another Helen.
I mean, I'm not, like I say, I'm not even sure I'm the best Helen O'Hara, so, you know, it's fine.
This is true.
That is true.
She's a much better fiddler than I am.
So. I beg your pardon?
She plays the violin.
That's a sex award again.
So she's a fiddler, you've got the horn, right?
Okay, well, listen, we've got some questions here. We've got loads of questions from listeners. I'm going to throw one, maybe two at you that I think are slightly linked. The first one comes from Chubby Ewok. Which films have you stumbled across while they're filming? Chubby Ewok says, I bumped into Bradley Cooper filming Maestro in Central Park last week, and he has a picture of Bradley Cooper as Leonard Bernstein.
Yes, he does.
Cool.
In Central Park. Which
that's
is
pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
I used to do this professionally.
Yeah, I used to. So when I first joined Empire, I was informed that this was a thing that we did, that we would try and go down to locations where stuff was being filmed and get some photos of them in action.
That's not bumping into a film, though, is it?
No, it's hunting them down. But like, it was a point period of time where whenever you saw those little, you'd see them attached to lampposts, little fluorescent signs with an arrow, and it said lock. It would say lock or base. Mm-hmm. And that would mean someone's filming, lock for the location, base to where the trailers and stuff are. And I would follow the lock signs to find out what we're shooting there to see if I could get pictures for the website, because I'm that committed.
But in terms of actually happening across films, it's mostly the old Royal Naval College.
In Greenwich,
mm-hmm. near us, where if you go for a run of a morning, you tend to pass by and there tends to be stuff happening. So there's been Bridgerton. I saw that terrible Sherlock Holmes movie with Will Ferrell. Shooting there. It had great sets. I saw Enola Holmes filming there, Les Mis. I think I missed Thor. I was away that week, but I was there for, was it Red 2 was there? And Man from U.N.C.L.E. was definitely there with the loads of Russian flags up. Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I cannot go for a run through there in the morning without bumping into a film.
There you
happening.
Go. Yeah.
That's my most common answer. Oh, but then there was another time I was tour guiding actually, in Edinburgh, and we get to Edinburgh and I saw all of these giant rigs over the cathedral at the top of the Royal Mile, or halfway up the Royal Mile.
Giant rigs. I did not see that particularly lethal weapon.
Giant stunt rigs. 1G, not 2. And that was Avengers Infinity War.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry. I've not heard of that film. Tell us about it.
You wouldn't have, but it's shot in Edinburgh on location, just a little indie film. And I saw that happening.
You saw them deep fry a kebab.
I saw them. Well, I actually, that is now a fancy coffee shop. So I went in there on principle and had
We went there, didn't we? When we were up to do the Edinburgh podcast.
Yes, I don't think it was open at the time, though.
No, I don't think it was a coffee house then.
No, I think it was between, I think it had been a cupcake place.
They had
place
a sign in the window,
be.
I think so.
Yeah, they did have an Avengers sign. Used. They did not offer to deep fry anything for me.
No,
yeah.
They still don't deep fry anything, which was a bit of a disappointment, if I'm honest. But, you know, the coffee was very nice. Okay. So it has
did
that
they deep fry the
it.
Coffee?
No, I wasn't sure how that would go, so I didn't ask.
They must have been offended.
Probably were.
Avenged did.
That wee lassie came in here, but she didn't ask to have her coffee deep fried.
Wow, it's just a flawless accent.
Yeah. I'm Who sure knew what, Jerry Butler worked there? I have no idea.
I'm sure that's gained us just thousands of Scottish listeners.
Less as deep fried.
Oh God,
a proud people.
Jimbo, have you stumbled in a non-professional capacity and back in the days whenever you were the rogue arm of Empire? You were like the paramilitary wing of Empire.
Yeah, I was a little bit. I mean, I stumbled across a lot of them in an unprofessional capacity, but that was while I was on the job when I invaded the sets of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone and Pearl Harbor, to name but two. Spider as well, Last Orders, I think, lots of things. But in terms of actually what I wandered onto the set of The Midwich Cuckoos, which is a recent show that we reviewed on Pilot with Keely Halls.
Great book.
Yes, indeed. And because I was walking to Paddington, ran across Keely Halls at Paddington Station.
Cool.
And I can't think of any. I mean, lots of, like I said, I've chased location signs all over the place. What's it for? The Spy Game. Do you remember Brad Pitt and The Spy Game?
Who could forget? Redford.
They were filming in the city one week and I got sent by my then editor to the city on a weekend to search for the Spy Game.
Oh, and nothing else is happening in the city at weekend. It's gross.
No,
but
it's
actually,
like Blade Runner.
Once I was coming through the city on a bus and it was very slow coming past Bank. And that's because Mary Poppins was filming Mary Poppins.
Mary
returns.
Poppins?
Mary
did you
Poppins?
Collect £200 when you were passed?
Yes.
Because that's how it works,
yeah,
right?
That's yeah. How it works. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good.
Yeah, it's one of those cost of living payouts that we hear so much about. Because I live near that place in Greenwich as well. There's been a few that I've actually kind of watched. So I watched him film Cruella, a scene from Cruella the bars of the fence at Old Royal Naval College. It was the scene where she comes out and to I want to be adored, I think. Whereas there's a big party. Because that location is used multiple times in Cruella,
yeah.
But it's like a different place each time. And it also plays Regent's Park.
It does, yeah.
Which absolutely bears no resemblance to.
Not convincingly. Not one of its greatest performances.
My Street also appears in that movie, but I'm not going to tell you where, lest you murder me. And
that's directed at me, presumably.
It is, yeah. You know where I live, which terrifies me. I wake every morning to see you standing over me like the Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
3 a.m.
That's me.
Naked.
Morning, Grace. Bangly bang. Actually, that's a bad thing to say. Some, as we now know, you definitely shouldn't say bangly bang to people because you're essentially saying bum holy bum.
Bum. Well, you're not, are you?
I mean, it's, I don't.
To that
think
one
this is
person.
Yeah.
To that one person.
Or their town. Let's be open to it.
If you are that person, please inform us where in Northern Ireland you come from and where this is a thing because I want to know.
Giant's Causeway, presumably.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
the
think
Giant's
so.
Bangle.
It's up near my part of the world. Why would a causeway be a bangle?
Like, well, because the Giant's Causeway sounds a bit like the Giant's Back Passage. But so obviously the entrance to that would be a bangle.
But it's just, like, this just shows that you haven't come and visited any time you've been in Northern Ireland. So I just I'm not even going to engage in it because no. It's a whole causeway. Like a causeway is a big road. You wouldn't call
Where
a
we're
road
going,
a
Helen, we don't need roads.
It was a road to Scotland. And when Finn McCool got there, he went, deep fry my kebab, so you will. And he went, no, Finn McCool, I will not deep fry your kebab, you bastard.
Yeah, and then they had a big fight.
Aye.
Sort of. Kind of.
Because there was a bigger Scottish giant.
There was a bigger Scottish giant. And
Martin
that's
Riggs.
Finn McCool was a giant.
Finn McCool was a giant. Yeah.
Was he the giant of the Causeway
yes,
fame?
That's what we literally
Jesus
said to you.
Christ.
I understand. I listen to maybe 10, 15% of what you say on
and
this podcast.
You
so.
Speak so much.
I mean, right. Finn McCool.
Finn McCool.
Because I just assumed the McCool part was like a name he gave himself. I am Finn McCool.
No, he's like, you know, it's like Connor McLeod. Like some people just have cool
Finn
names.
McCool of the Clan McCool.
So he was a big giant. So there
as
are,
opposed to a small giant.
No, he was quite a big giant. Like he was a big giant, like in his own, on his own turf. But there was this Scottish giant, right? And they started like standing on cliffs and shouting insults at each other or whatever. And so finally they said, look, this is, we're going to have a fight. We're going to sort this out. So the two of them start building a bridge, essentially, a causeway across the sea.
Uh-huh. So they can have a fight.
But as they start getting closer to the end of the causeway and the bits start coming towards meeting up, Finn looks over and he's like, this guy is so much fucking bigger than I am. What the hell am I going to do? So he runs home to his missus and he's like, I've made a huge mistake. Like, this guy is going to beat me up. He's much bigger than I am. I don't know what to do. She goes, let me just bring the kid to my mother's. We'll sort this out. So she brings the baby to her mother's house.
The giant baby.
The giant baby. Dresses Finn up in the baby clothes, puts him in the cradle.
This, you're making
this is the story, right?
Do you tell this to your kids on this tour guide thing?
Everyone tells this to everybody's kids on this tour guide thing.
Okay. You're making this up, he says, of a story that's been
about
made up.
About giants.
Yes.
So anyway.
The made-up story has been made up.
Meanwhile, she bakes some rocks in the oven and stuff. Anyway, it's a whole thing. Just stick with me. So anyway, the Scottish
giant... Rock cakes or just...
Rock cakes, yeah, but with rocks in them this time. So anyway, so she's there, like, just doing stuff around the house, and the Scottish giant finishes the causeway on his own, comes running in to pick on Finn, but he's a polite guy, so he knocks on the door. She opens it. The giant door.
Penny! Penny! Penny!
It's very much like that. So so she explains that Finn isn't home right
now.
And
that's the Big Bang Theory. He's a giant.
Because he's a giant, yeah. She explains it.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Where is this coming?
So, yeah, right. She says he's not home.
He's not home. Come on in and you can sit down and have a cup of tea while you wait for Finn to come back.
Giant tea.
So the Scottish giant comes in, you know, makes nice. Is a bit discomforted, honestly, by the size of the baby. And she assures the Scottish giant that the giant baby is much smaller than
When you say the Scottish
father.
Giant, is his name Macbeth? Is that why you're saying it that way?
No, it's because I don't know his name.
Right, okay.
He does have a name, but I don't remember what it was. So
it's Wayne.
He's already getting a bit discomforted by the gigantic size of this baby.
Size
Meanwhile, she gives like a normal kind of a rock kick to the baby, aka Finn. So he's chewing away happily. And the Scottish giant is breaking all his teeth on this rock cake. And she's going, well, I don't know what's wrong with you because the baby is having no problems eating exactly the same cake. Wink, wink, look to camera. Anyway, it ends up with
Imagine
the Scottish giant
the
getting so freaked out by this whole thing that he runs home breaking the causeway behind him.
He
and that's why we only have the stump of the causeway on the coast.
That's right.
And he broke the rest of it.
Yeah, because he didn't want Finn following him, did he? Because Finn was clearly bigger than he was because look at the size of his baby.
So... In conclusion, I stumbled upon a set of Cruella once. They also filmed on my street. And recently I stumbled upon the set of Napoleon, which was also filming there at the old
Royal
Naval College. Yeah, a huge Napoleon. So I stumbled upon Napoleon, but I did not see Joaquin Phoenix. But I did recently stumble upon, they were filming in the old Royal Naval College. They were filming something set in the 1936 Berlin Olympics. I'm not sure whether it was a film or a TV show. But because they were trying to recreate Berlin in 1936, the place was liberally festooned with swastikas and German flags and paraphernalia.
I've seen that before as well. It's very disturbing.
They had to put out signs going, this is what we're doing.
It's all right. We're not massive Nazis. Yeah.
This is what we're doing. And this is why there's loads of flags.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that. Oh, I tell you what as well. I went for a race a while ago and they had just been filming Craven the Hunter.
A giant Craven the Hunter?
Like he was in the sky at the end of Spider-Man.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. I don't know the biggest film. I guess Cruella and Napoleon are those are two pretty big films that I stumbled across. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I've told this before in the podcast. Remember the time that Simon Pegg's The Good Night was filming in the cafe just beneath where Empire used to be? And we went down and we started waving and he called us across. And we
I've remembered one.
Set visit.
I have remembered one.
Yeah?
It was in the year 2000 and
Let's
near...
Let's all
the-
meet up.
Yes, I saw Christina Ricci in the the window of a restaurant thing on the while I was walking to the office, and they were shooting something. I don't know what it was. It was a film that she made in I guess 2000. So there you go. That's a great anecdote. You can write that down.
Fascinating.
It's good. Wow. Good. She was in the window making up something.
Anyway, let's talk about films. next week, because I think we have exhausted the possibilities of this section. We have to move on. If you want to get your question read out on the Emperor podcast and treat it with the respect it deserves, as Chubby Ewok found to his displeasure this week, then you can get in touch with me on Twitter. I'm at Chris Hewitt, and you can send in a DM if you want to. You can slide into my DMs. You can wait for a panicked shout out every now and again. You can just reply to any single one of my tweets. All right, movie news. Movie news. Where to start with movie news? There is one place, and only one place to start, and that is with the news that Joker 2 is not, which is, you know, maybe just called Joker Folie à Deux, is not just going to be a straight up sequel. Mm-hmm. It may well star Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn. And it may well be a musical.
Kenobi! It's going to be great. Sorry, Helen's looking at me blankly. Sorry, Helen. That was a callback, something while you were on quote-unquote holiday.
I mean, literal holiday. Like, holiday. I'm not even pretending otherwise.
Holiday.
Okay, so I am obviously very conflicted about this. As How someone who admires Lady Gaga and her, and her film career to date.
All two of them.
Yeah, but look, you know.
Good films.
Good films.
Good films.
And then this. And then this.
And this.
And then
and
this.
This, Helen.
Thing.
Every day is Christmas Eve.
Maybe this is the one that will get me back on board with The Joker, which sucks.
The Joker, which sucks. Which is, it's like the Dr. Seuss story.
The Joker that sucked. Yeah.
I do not like him in the hood. I do
I would not,
like him.
Could not, on a
He's
train.
No
I will not, shall not. In the rain? I don't know. Yeah, no. Just...
I do not like him on the stairs. I do not like him anywhere.
Dancing down those steps.
I do not like him dancing in the... Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So Helen's excitement is palpable.
I mean, look, I'm really trying to it's not the performance, it's not the way it looked, it's certainly not the score.
Pilot, not the plane. Is that what you're
saying? Hated its attitude. If it has a different attitude this time, if it has a different outlook.
It's big incel energy.
Yeah, a little bit that, a little bit the nihilism, a little bit the the crappy treatment of people with mental health issues. I just, you know, if it could just be a very, 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 very different film with completely different pretty much everything, then maybe I can get on board with it. You know?
Joker then, 5 stars, Empire.
Joker 2, 5 stars, 6 stars, 7 stars, 8 stars, because this news, I had a very complicated relationship with this announcement when it was announced the other day. Someone on Twitter, by the way, came up with a genius idea and said they should have just kept this quiet. And I'm sure that, I don't think they announced this. This was scooped by a scoop hound at the Hollywood Reporter who was doing his scoopy thing, clearly followed a look sign and then got to Todd Phillips' unit base.
That's it.
And then just, you know, looked
That's
at the script.
That works,
That's how it works. Yeah. That's what you just do. So someone said that they should not have mentioned that this was a musical at all. They should have kept it out of the marketing. If it is indeed a musical, they should have kept it out of the marketing completely. And then when you're in the cinema, it's like, holy fuck, is this a musical?
Send in the clowns.
Sound in the clowns.
Do you not think that there's a slight schadenfreude to be had from that fact that a decent percentage of the people who love Joker will absolutely hate the fact that the sequel is a musical?
That's true. Yeah, that's
possibly,
true, I guess.
But then they'll adopt it. They'll cling it to their bosom. They'll go, it's the best musical ever. You don't understand musicals.
I do think that's genuinely quite realistic. I think that is entirely possible that they will rubbish every other musical ever made for not being Joker 2.
You come at Les Mis, you best not miss.
Well,
Mis?
Quite.
Miss. Best not miss. I don't know. Anyway, something.
Best not miss Marvel. But here's my complicated relationship with this news. My initial response was one of revulsion, horror, terror. I threw up. And I was like, no, this is awful. This is a terrible, terrible, horrible, very bad idea.
Bad.
I can't be having this at all. Then half an hour went by and I was thinking, actually, Lady Gaga is really good casting as Harley Quinn. If you're going to go down that route, if you're not going to go Margot Robbie, if you're going to go Elseworlds alternate universe and you're going to do this thing and it's a musical and she's got, you know, one of the best singers in the business and she's fantastic and she's, you know, she taps into that vein of weirdness in her, you know, in her...
Meat dresses.
Meat dresses, you know.
Who among us has not worn a meat dress?
I've never a dress I didn't like. I don't know what that means. And... Then half an hour after that, I was like, you know what? I think this might be genius. I genuinely think this might be an amazing idea because don't do the first movie over again.
No, that's a
change.
Don't,
it up.
Please don't. Please,
I beg of you, please don't do the first movie again. 11 Oscars, $1 billion, box office, people love it. We aren't in that camp, but that's fine. But this sounds good. And also, I'm now beginning to wonder about the power I wield, because I said in last week's podcast, you know, what's the Scorsese film that Todd Phillips might homage this time around? Is it a combination of Condon and Hugo? Is it a combination of New York, New York and Wolf of Wall Street? And he may have been listening.
Yeah.
He maybe completely overhauled the script in response to that.
Wow. I mean, your power is astonishing.
In 2 days.
Almost unbelievable, in fact.
Yeah.
Almost
a bit like a Northern Irish giant dressing up as a baby to bewilder and befuddle a larger Scottish giant.
I don't see where the confusion lies in that story. It's a very, very classic story. But look, yeah, you're right. It could be amazing. I do love her. And if, as I say, if they change everything about the mentality of the first film, then I'm all for this.
I don't think they'll change that much, no. But the fact if it's a musical, what are the music? As Michael Caine once said, "What are your favorite music?" And which is a tweet he once tweeted. What are your favorite music? And are these going to be original songs, written or even co-written by Lady Gaga?
Can't read my Joker face.
Oh, that's good.
This stuff writes itself.
That is very good. And if I knew any other Lady Gaga songs. I'd be all Bad Romance?
Yep.
Is that one she does?
Yeah,
Just Dance,
so.
Down the Steps.
There you go.
This is all coming together.
Jimbo, you happy about this?
Couldn't give a shit.
Instead of Edge of Glory. I mean, look, this is going to be fine. Yeah. Hey.
Little does Jimbo know, I've beeped everything he said on this podcast.
It's just been a beep, 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 beep. It sounds like Morse code, the whole podcast.
The thing about Jimbo is he's a massive beep.
Bangles all the way. Oh. I've got news.
Love the bangles. Yeah. What is it?
Helen, what you do in the bedroom is your own business.
Oh, boy.
Come
Paddington
on.
3.
Yay.
Has a title, and it is Paddington in Peru. Paddington 3 has a director, and it is not Paul King, but it is Dougal Wilson, a.k.a. the man who did the John Lewis advert.
Which one? He's done several, hasn't he?
He's done several John Lewis adverts. My understanding is he's done the last few.
Okay.
So he's like the...
their go-to guy.
Yeah. And since those adverts have always struck me as being Paddington-esque in their attempts to, generate a little bit of heart and a bit of whimsy and a bit of visual pizzazz, I can see why they've gone for him.
Also, he's never knowingly undersold.
Yes, I'm sure that's true of him. Also, a Dougal seems like a good name for a Paddington.
If
director.
I were to be
you
a
let
Scottish
do a
giant, I would 100% be called Dougal Wilson. I don't know what accent that was, but his name was Dougal Wilson.
I don't know about Wilson, but Dougal does not seem that far off. There is a name for the Scottish giant. I just forget the name. I'm sure people are yelling it at their podcast listening devices right now.
Yeah. It is something, isn't it?
It is something. He does have a name. It might honestly be Dougal or MacDougal. Am I going to have to look it up? Oh, for
yes.
God's sake.
The Scottish Giant.
The Scottish Giant.
Do you think the Scottish widow will ever remarry? I hope she does. I hope she finds happiness.
Ben and Donner.
Ben and Donner. You know, he directed that film with the giant Martin Riggs.
So Ben and Donner.
No,
or Ben and
ben
Donner.
Ben and Donner.
Yeah.
So Ben and Donner, like one word, like one, like the name of the
Is
one.
It in the same way that, you like Bennifer, so it's Ben and Donner, like
yeah.
As in...
But one person, not two.
Okay, so it's not Ben and Donner. His name is Ben and
Donner.
His first name is what?
His first name is Ben and Donner.
Oh, that's the whole first name. I thought you were just complaining the first name. It's a Ben and Donner.
This is like when
something.
People. I have a very good friend called Anne Howard, and people thought I was being incredibly formal in always referring to my friend Anne Howard as by both halves of her name. But her name is one word.
A bit like Anne Boleyn.
Right, but not. Yeah. Anyway, Paddington 3. I mean,
yes,
look.
Yes, Paddington in Peru.
I think we all have the same, worry here, which is that it won't live up to the magnificent standards set by the first two Paddington movies. And so there is a huge amount of pressure on Dougal Wilson to get this right. No, don't mean to add to it, but honestly, I actually do mean to add to it. You have to get this right.
I think he's
Dougal
aware of
Wilson.
The pressure.
I would imagine, yeah, he seems like a sensible man, so he is. But and look, Paul King is hugely behind him. Wilson himself is a huge fan of the first two films. These are all good things, but yeah, mess up Paddington and he may have to leave the country forever. I'm just saying.
I yeah.
You know, I mean,
Fingers crossed.
But look, also, yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely but fantastic.
I would have run a mile from this, to be honest. I would have just gone, no, we're doing, we're stuck, we're done, Paddington 2, that's it. There are no more Paddingtons from this point on.
Yeah.
Because how can you possibly top Paddington 2? But yeah, so he seems to be going to Peru this time.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Browns will be following him, if Mr. Curry will be following him.
God,
I hope he's not been deported.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he almost certainly has. Under this
government. I mean, this government absolutely would deport Paddington.
He just had tea with the Queen, for the love of God. You'd think he'd have some sort of political protection.
You would, wouldn't you? But
no, not against this lot.
That's right.
Not against this lot.
This has really depressed me suddenly.
It is. Let's move on to something in no way depressing, and it is that there is a new cut of Spider-Man No Way Home making its way to cinemas, and it is Spider-Man : No Way Home Extended... No, hang on. Spider-Man : No Way Home... ; the more fun stuff version, which I'm not saying is the worst name for any film ever, but I mean, it might be.
It's got to be in the top two, doesn't it?
First of all, you don't go ; you never go ; you go :- or -: or something like that.
We're
you
getting back to bangles, aren't we?
100%. Never go ;
I think
once you've been through the bangle.
I don't know. I think you can. There's lots of things I can think of at a ;
don't overdo it.
Mission Impossibles.
Yeah.
No, they use dashes and colons, don't they?
They actually do usually mix up.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible, there was one that might have had a ;
It's Mission :- Impossible -, and then
a
subtitle.
Lot of movies these days dispense with the colon altogether.
Which is just upsetting Jurassic Park Dominion. World Dominion. Jurassic,
Top
Jurassic
Maverick,
:, World :,
Avengers
Dominion.
Avengers Endgame, Thor Ragnarok, none of these officially have colons in the title.
I can get Avengers I can get away with because it's like Avengers Endgame. You can always have an apostrophe in there, make it quite profound.
Ooh, I like an apostrophe, not just because there's one in my name, but also... Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Why would you have an apostrophe in there?
You're right. It'd be an impostrophe. Because it would be the Avengers endgame, their endgame, the endgame belonging to the Avengers.
The endgame belonging to the Avengers.
Not the endgame that defines the
but
Avengers.
But then the Infinity War didn't really belong to the Avengers. That belonged to Thanos.
Well, that's why it doesn't have an apostrophe, Helen.
I'm really confused.
Anyway, the more fun stuff version, which is a genuinely, genuinely terrible title for a release, is going to build on the 148-minute theatrical cut of that film with some deleted stuff, which I'm sure is excellent, and that's why I didn't make it into the...
It could be. Like, they're very, very, like, adorable people. If it's just more of, like, Ned and MJ and Peter hanging out, that's probably a good thing. But you can see why it might have slowed down the plot. And equally, if it's, you know... involving those other two people who came into the film.
We pointing probably, at each other.
Yeah. That is delightful too. We could have more of that. That wouldn't be a bad thing. Do we need it strictly? No, but
no.
I'm not
Will I see it six
it.
Times? Yes.
Absolutely.
There's some hot news about The Old Guard 2, a film we all know exists and we cannot wait to see. And it is that Uma Thurman and Henry Golding have joined the cast of The Old Guard 2, which will be directed by Victoria Mahoney.
Did they think they were short on, you know, cut glass cheekbones? Like, what was the thinking here?
They must have done. So the sequel to The Old Guard is, it's the film that came out on Netflix a couple of years ago, and Charlize Theron
was a lot of fun.
An immortal person. Okay. It was not a good film, but this is hopefully going to be better. Let me go.
Like, it was... Look, I just really enjoyed it because it came out at that point in the pandemic where we had like a couple of months of very good small indie films, and that had been the only thing that was released. And I, for one, had people punching each other, you know, like withdrawal symptoms. So the Old Guard just absolutely hit that spot for me.
Yeah,
it was brilliant.
So I did not like it at all on my first viewing and gave it 2 stars, then watched it again because you hassled me, I seem to recall.
Me?
And then I watched it again and actually enjoyed it a lot more. And then I revised my review and gave it 3 stars.
But no, it's potentially fun, and I'm excited to see what Victoria Mahoney, who did Lovecraft Country, and what she does with it. Somebody said on Twitter, and now it's all I can see, is that Uma Thurman should be playing Charlize's, like, sister or something. Just in the tall, you know, gorgeous, blonde,
immortal sort of
a way. And now I really want that to happen, even though that's probably not the plan. But there you go.
All right. A couple of last things before we move on and review the films that are out this week. They have revealed the name of the bad guy from Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And looks like Miles Morales will be going full Lady Macbeth and saying, "Out, damn, Lespot."
What?
Oh, no, damn spot. Famous line from Macbeth. Said
no, who's the villain? I'm confused.
The spot.
Le spot.
The spot.
Not. He's not French.
And he's not the little dog from the kiddies book.
It's the spot.
The spot. Yeah.
Le spot or the spot?
The spot.
The spot.
Right.
It infers, the way you're saying it, it sounds like le spot. Yeah.
Lee spot.
Yeah,
not Lee Spot.
Lee Spot.
So his name
it's
is
a man
Lee
called
Spot.
Lee Spot.
Okay, yeah. Fine.
The Spot. He has his body's covered in black portals, interdimensional portals. You know how it is. They're made to feel like living ink, and they can transport him anywhere he wants to go.
That sounds handy.
And he can also create portals and send people through
portals.
Them.
We should talk about that.
Hey, and he's voiced by Jason Schwartzman.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And the film is not out until next year, but it's very, very, very exciting. And perhaps he will also be one of the reasons why Miles Morales is going across the Spider-Verse if he has a suit that can actually transport people through the multiverse. That's pretty cool. But the probably, I don't know, the coolest bit of movie news this week, because you know it's very nice that there's Paddington 3 and we're all excited about it, although a little bit trepidatious. But a film I'm massively excited about is Knives Out 2, which this week got an official title. Rian Johnson took to Twitter and Instagram to say that the official title of Benoit Blanc's next case will be called Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery.
Ooh.
A glass onion. Is this because it's got layers?
Well, of course, he did The Last Jedi and it had layer.
That's so true. Only the one, though.
He's doubling up. Yeah. This is true. Glass Onion, of course, is a title of a Beatles song. It is off the White Album. It is a John Lennon song.
I didn't know that.
It has lots of very interesting and kind of meta lyrics. It's a great song. Love that song. But whether that's influenced this, I do not know. But, you know, Rian Johnson talked about it. I'm surprised it's called Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, and not a Benoit Blanc mystery.
Well, association, isn't it? Because there'll obviously be a demographic of people who will not make the connection.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's it. I think
they're trying
simple,
to link it together. It's like Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But still, you know, Benoit Blanc, he's the draw. He's the attraction.
I know,
here.
But I think no one would disagree. Mm-hmm. But I think that James's analysis for once is right. So.
Say it again.
Oh my God.
Never.
Put it on my Wikipedia page.
Never.
So he has said that he's been inspired by Agatha Christie and how she kept changing things up for her books, that you think they're all just whodunits, but they're not. They're spy thrillers, proto-slasher horrors, serial killer hunts, gothic romances, psychological character studies, glam travelogues. When I made Knives Out, that's what excited me about the prospect of making more mysteries with Daniel Craig, that is, as Benoit Blanc, to emulate Christie and have every film be like a whole new book with its own tone, ambition, reason for being, and title.
Here for it.
Do you know that Agatha Christie may have been the first English woman ever in the world to surf?
No.
Well, that's true.
No.
I'm not kidding. She visited Hawaii in like, whatever, early. And she's thought to have been the very first English woman ever to surf.
I just thought
you'd want to know that. I don't personally have the pics with me right now, but somebody out there will be able to tell you if I'm right or not.
It's ... Agatha Christie.
Are you saying Point Break was adapted from one of her early mysteries?
Very much so, yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Can we talk, just before we go, about Ken?
Oh,
Ken.
Livingston. Yes.
It's beyond my wildest ken. What's happening there?
It is also beyond...
My wildest ken. Very Scottish this week.
It is very, yeah. I went to Sean Connery's castle from
Entrapment.
Is that a euphemism?
No, and Sean Connery's castle from Highlander.
And here you can see my bangle.
Anywho...
There can be only one.
They revealed the first picture of Ryan Gosling in... Costume is such a strong word. In character as Ken in the Barbie movie, which is out next year. I honestly, words have failed a lot of the internet on this. He has bleached his hair like white blonde. He's gone full Zac Efron with the fake tan and with the abs. He's wearing a cut off jean jacket and personalized underoos. I don't know what this film is, but I'm so intrigued to find out.
So am I, genuinely. This is the kind of film where, were it made by anyone else, I would avoid like the plague, and yet
it's Greta Gerwig directing from a script she wrote with Noah Baumbach.
Right.
A Barbie movie.
I sense it's not going to be straightforward.
No, but I genuinely don't know anything about what to expect. And I feel like it's broken my brain in a more pleasant way than Joker 2, but only slightly more pleasant because Barbie is weird. Yeah. So yeah, what is happening? I don't know. But anyway, amazing cast. It's also got America Ferrera, Simu Liu, Kate McKinnon, Alexander Shipp, Emma Mackey, Kingsley Benadire, Issa Rae, Michael Cera, and of course, Margot Robbie herself. So, look, incredible people involved. Incredible image of Gosling. Mm. I cannot wait to find out what the fuck is going on.
What's interesting to me is the number of people who are just writing this movie off, citing the scene, going, what is this? It looks like shit. Someone looked at this picture of him and went, this is giving me Cats vibes. And I was like, okay, maybe in terms of it's a bold swing and a miss, maybe, but I don't know. I've got a feeling that this is going to be a very, very clever. I'm hoping, and this is praise. This is actual praise. I know it sounds like it's faint praise or maybe even not faint praise, but I hope that this is this generation's Josie and the Pussycats.
Yes, and is as successful as that film should have been if there were any justice in the world.
Very much so. There are rumors that it might be some sort of, not a multiverse movie, but that there's loads of different Kens in the film and he's just one of the Kens and Simu Liu is another Ken and there may be even more than one Barbie. So it's not just Margot Robbie. Very exciting. We shall see what happens when Barbie opens next year on the same day as Oppenheimer.
What? Wow.
Yeah, we talked about this in the podcast.
We did talk about this, but I've been on holiday. I've forgotten everything.
I am become death, destroyer of Kens.
No. I feel like it'll split the audience right down the middle. I feel like those films are not...
Like the Atom.
I feel like those films are not really in competition apart from among film nerds. Everyone else has a preference. Would you like to see Oppenheimer or Barbie? Normal people have an answer to that. It's only film nerds that are going to be in any way torn on that day.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. Well, we shall see what happens next year when those movies open in tandem and other places around the world, not just tandem. Now it is time for our guests this week. Very excited about this because our guests are Emma Thompson, Dame Emma Thompson, if you please, and Daryl McCormack, who are not the only two cast members, but they are the main cast members of Sophie Hyde's excellent, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, in which Emma Thompson plays a woman who is a little bit lost. She has never really experienced sexual pleasure, and she is getting on in years, not by any means ready for the knacker's yard, of course, but she is someone who's a little desperately unhappy, really. And so she books a session in a hotel with a sex worker, Shikolo. What's the actual
sex worker?
Sex worker called Leo Grand, played by Daryl McCormack. And the film plays out across the course of several meetings as they get to know each other, get to unlock each other's psyches and past. And there's a lot of shagging as well. So it's got something for everybody. And they're great together. They're absolutely brilliant together, Daryl McCormack and Emma Thompson, as you might expect. Yeah, and he is an Irish actor that you would have seen in Pixie when it came out a couple of years ago. And she's Emma Thompson.
Yes, he was in Wheel of Time as well.
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
The Wheel of Time is forever turning. That's the famous quote from that.
Oh, boy.
We spoke to them. I say we. Ella Kemp. Ella Kemp is making her Empire podcast debut with this interview when she spoke to Emma Thompson and Daryl McCormack in a top London hotel a few weeks ago, and I was there to basically press record and try not to laugh at things they were saying, which was difficult because they're goddamn funny. Here we go. Daryl McCormack and Emma Thompson, do please enjoy.
Today I'm thrilled to be joined with the stars of Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, Daryl McCormack and Emma Thompson.
Hello Ella.
Hey,
how are you both doing today?
We're all right. We're in a sort of, just to give you the scene, dear listeners, in a sort of dungeon room underneath a very posh hotel, which is sort of decorated with,
motorbike parts, and golf clubs.
And
is
golf
it Top
clubs.
Gun themed?
It's, I don't know. I don't think I want to know. I'm not sure about the decoration. Then there's a lot of kind of shards of mirror up on the wall. In fact, I think there may be some sort of satanic ritual about to happen.
I'd just like to say Empire didn't bring you here.
No.
We can't.
You say that.
Please don't
send
us hate mail.
And yet here we are holding microphones.
Are we
happy
to be here?
It's a little bit difficult for you to refuse to accept responsibility. We're very happy to be here. I love Empire magazine. I do love it. I've always loved it.
Well, we love you. And we're thrilled to have you both here. We're in a closed off room. We're kind of stuck with each other, but I think it's kind of beautifully fitting for the film that we're talking about.
Indeed.
So your film, for anybody who hasn't been lucky enough to see it yet, is a beautiful sex-positive comedy in which, Emma, you play Nancy, an ordinary but very extraordinary woman who hires Daryl's character Leo, a sex worker, and they have a wonderful series of days and nights together. The whole film hinges on your relationship, the two of you. Can you take me back to when you first met and what were your first impressions of each other?
I was like, oh God, yeah, so really, I don't know if I could do this. I mean, she's just so uncharming. And I remember meeting you outside your garden.
Yeah.
And we went for a walk.
In the mud.
And I remember being so conscious about actually my footwear, because I wore Doc Martens and it was like muddy puddles. And
it was a spot of sliding.
There was a spot of sliding. But yeah, I remember just having such a beautiful walk and talking about the film. And, you know, at this point, I hadn't officially attached. So it was just a chance for us to get to know each other and our take on the project. But it was such a beautiful introduction, I felt. I think we were really trying to just get to know one another because we knew how intimate the film was and how much we would have needed to rely on each other. Mm. So
you couldn't do it without
yeah,
complete trust, and also knowing that you're stepping into something that's something of a mystery. Because actually, until we started to play it, we didn't really know what it was. Actually, I mean, I knew it was essential that we make it, that when Casey sent the script, I said, we absolutely have to make this, it's brilliant. But until I started to play her, and you may have found this with Leo, but until I started to play Nancy, like at the read through, I didn't realize how emotional, when she starts to cry talking about her experience as a 16-year-old with that Greek waiter, and you know, the cauterization of her sexual pleasure when she was little, and suddenly the tragedy of it, actually, that she's only had these very, very, well, how would you describe her sexual experience to that moment? I mean, Leo's quite...
almost detrimental.
Yeah.
You know?
Almost harmful, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's something that was... that those layers kind of came in and through our work with our director, Sophie Hyde, as well. Mm. And I think we realised the scope of what the film had to offer in terms of, the levity at moments, but also the real questioning of these issues that I don't think have been addressed, you know, or that we certainly haven't seen on screen. And so it became an amazing opportunity to go on this journey. But we were, I think, as surprised as we got further and further into the work that it had so much that was kind of falling on our shoulders and Sophie's. So
much of the film is really surprising in all the topics that it talks about, as you say. And what I loved is that there's a relatively even split between, I think you could expect the film to be full of very, well, physical, intimate scenes, which there are some of those, but also so many of the shocking and really quite stunning moments are in the dialogue. When you were filming this, which scenes as actors felt more revealing and nerve-wracking? Was it the physical ones or, you know, the very dialogue heavy ones which is just very confessional?
Oh, definitely the dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, when we got to physical intimacy, it was like, it was like a Christmas. It was such a lovely time.
In your own clothes, it's a half day and you get ice cream. And like you get no homework.
It's like a holiday.
It was a holiday.
Because there weren't any words. It was just us with their clothes on in a room. What should we do now? All this is. Oh, that's funny. It was just heaven. So that wasn't a problem. But every night we used to just do the because there were so many words. I mean, you know, this is a film that's an hour and a half, around 40 minutes, whatever, shot in 19 days. That's quite a number. And Sophie, thank God, We knew you couldn't do it without knowing it absolutely perfectly. So we worked in the evenings as well, obviously, to prepare for the next day. And oftentimes it was sitting there going, oh gosh, is this going to be funny, or is this going to be, it could be quite sad. I don't know. I hope it's not going to be this funny, because if so, I'm not going to be able to keep a straight face. Because there were moments when we did have difficulty.
Yes, absolutely.
But as you say, there's levity, but there's also these very deep dives that we make as characters. And so, and those are, as you rightly say, conversational, because conversation is everything when you're finding out about people. And there are those two people looking into each other's eyes, and or not, depending on what they're trying to hide or not. And those are the moments that you really have to get right if you want the audience to receive what's going on.
Yeah. It's so intense. I can imagine more so for you than for viewers watching, because watching it, it feels intense, but in a very nourishing way. Like, oh, thank God, somebody's finally saying this and they're finally doing this. And I do think part of it, for me, I was lucky enough to watch it in January 2022, when the Sundance Film Festival had gone virtual because of the pandemic. And obviously, because I was watching these films at home, you could kind of feel lingering COVID-ness in a lot of films. And I'm wondering how much that kind of swayed how you felt on set with this film, because it felt like a film which had to adapt to the pandemic, as so many films have, in terms of, you know, it's just the two of you and there's one room. Did it kind of change the emotional tone on set in that way? Because a lot of the conversations feel like questions that you might have been asking yourself while you're in lockdown on your own for 2 years.
I don't think so, actually, because Katie didn't write it necessarily. Did she write it in lockdown? I can't remember. Maybe that affected her in the sense that she had time. And maybe it affected the possibility of the film being made because it was just two people in a room. But that's all positive.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful consequence.
And as for us, you know, we were lucky, because the way it affected us was really how Norwich was.
It was incredible, yeah. We had, Norwich was in a lockdown, and we were staying 15 minutes from the set. So we were practically in a somewhat deserted city, which only provided more space for us to feel safe to walk around and be so focused on what we were doing. Because I think also with no kind of social element of making a film, which can happen.
That's true.
For drinks with the crew and stuff.
Didn't do any of that.
You know.
Not one drink.
No, we weren't allowed.
I'm so sorry.
We literally weren't allowed. And so it became, therefore, a very, very private, intimate experience. Mm. And I think we probably were greatly helped by that.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have had that intensity of experience. I felt like we were on our own with Soph, but obviously Soph's outside the set, but it was like being on our own for a month in a room.
It really was.
Yeah, extraordinary.
Sounds lovely.
It was. It was absolutely fantastic.
Emma, I want to ask about where the kind of film finds you in terms of your wider career. There's one film in particular, which from quite a few years ago back, I want to mention The Tall Guy from 1989. And, you know, there's a sex scene towards the beginning of that film in which you're very, Kurt's the wrong way, you're very frank, you're very direct, you're very honest. Does this feel like a bit of a, sorry, and also I must say for listeners, it's with Jeff Goldblum as well. I just feel like that needs to be, you know, clear to everyone. Does it feel like a bit of a full circle moment for you?
Now you mention it, it hasn't.
Have I made
it
a full circle moment for you?
Made the circle for me. I think maybe that the connection is that Jeff and I were so frightened before that sex scene. Of course, The Tall Guy is a full-on comedy, Richard Curtis's first movie script, and we were terrified. We were so terrified. We had indigestion for weeks, and we sat in our dressing gowns just panting with fear before we started, and we did 2 days, and that gave me so much confidence going forward if I ever had to take my clothes off, because I knew it was just such a lovely thing to do if you had the right atmosphere on set. There were these were the days of no intimacy coordinators, and so we just sort of were flung in there, and we were doing wild things, absolutely wild, flinging ourselves around, getting toes stuck to our asses and everything. So, yeah, it made me realise that nudity was levelling but elevating at the same time, humbling but also ennobling at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, another part of that obviously is we've touched on this, but your on-screen partner in scenes like this is everything. I want to come back to what you're saying about your first meeting. When you first met Daryl, but you hadn't, you know, got on set and become characters, what was it about him that made you think that, first of all, he was right for the character of Leo Grand, but that you could do this together?
It was because you were so thoughtful. You were so thoughtful and curious, and I knew that it needed to be so examined, forensically examined. I think we talked about that in that first meeting. And you were so engaged with the idea of it and, you know, a bit nervous because who wouldn't be? And but that wasn't getting in the way of your the sort of integrity of your curiosity, if you see what I mean. And I knew that that was going to be the bedrock of everything. You know, we had to be curious and profoundly thoughtful all the time. And I knew we'd probably be able to laugh. I think we had a few laughs on that. I mean, obviously, we weren't quite... We didn't know the extent to which we would be literally floored by hysteria on many occasions. But that was important, not essential, but pretty important. And physically as well, there was something very, I thought, important for me and Nancy about Daryl being tall, Leo being tall. There was something about the relationship between her looking up at him, an older woman looking up at a younger man. If they'd been at the same height, it would have changed the power structure as well. And because it's such an odd power structure, it's so unfamiliar. That felt right as well.
Daryl, I have to ask, you must have had some thoughts, a thought or two about Emma before meeting, but in what way did she surprise you when you started working together? What were things that you really didn't expect?
I mean...
Was it when I jumped out of that cupboard?
Yeah.
Saying boo.
Sorry?
I'm flinging that can of baked beans at your head. Yeah. Was that surprising. Yeah.
Why isn't this in the film?
I think I was super excited to the prospect of working with Emma, because I've admired her for quite some time. But I think I was. Why are you laughing? I'm being honest, Dimitri. Is it me doing a serious answer now?
No, not at all. It was just something as you were being born.
Oh yes.
I was. It was in 93. He was born in 93. I'm just saying.
In January 93.
January 93.
What were you doing in January 1993?
I was accepting my first Oscar. Hilarious. I've never felt so old.
Did that surprise you when you realised that, Dara?
I thought that was... I think that's amazing, isn't it? I think that's just amazing. I was super excited, but obviously super nervous and intimidated. But I think what was really comforting meeting Emma was just how willing she was and how just kind of collaborative she was and how much she felt like my, you know, part in this was deeply respected by her, and I never felt once, you know, never felt once like judged, or I really felt like I was invited to collaborate and be creative in this project with her. And that was just incredibly refreshing, just on the basis of how different or experience or, you know, or experience of work is. And so for that reason, it felt super special and exciting. And I think as people as well, like I just felt like, I don't know, we were able to just have conversations, and our differences as people never got in the way. We really were able to just...
I wonder how long, if you put together all the conversation that we had in that month, I wonder how long that conversation would be if you kind of timed it and then compared it to conversations you've had with people you've known for years, but you only see, you know, once every so often. We must have had so many hours of conversation about so many things. It's one of the great privileges, I suppose, of our job, is that we do sometimes get these extraordinary experiences, but they were only intensified, of course, by the COVID of it all.
We're running out of time, but I've got a couple of quickish fire questions for you. So, good luck to you, Leo Grand. It's in a hotel room. You're just stuck with, well, you're not stuck with one other person, but you are with just one other person. If you had to be stuck in a hotel room, I'm going to say for 5 days, considering the current, you know, self-isolation, etc. If you had to be stuck in a hotel room with one other person for 5 days, who would you pick?
Dead or alive?
Both, either.
Both? Oh, God, that's such a good question. Well, would you go negative? Well, you wouldn't go negative. You'd have to go with somebody you wanted to go to spend time with.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, would you spend 5 days in a room with Napoleon and try and find out what made him tick? Or, you know, just because that would be interesting. Or, you know, obviously somebody exquisitely brilliant like Mary Shelley or Wollstonecraft or one of the early feminists. That would be a fascinating conversation. I'd love that. What about you?
I don't know. I always go to some like obvious like musicians like Bowie or someone. I don't know, just musically or...
I don't know how much you'd get out of him.
I don't know.
See,
I don't even know.
It's 5 days. You've got to have someone who's willing to talk.
You can sleep a little bit, but
I'm trying to think of like...
What about somebody you want to have lots of sex with?
That's true. That's so true.
But then you see, then what if it's not good?
That's true.
You've made your decision. You've got 5 days and the sex is not very good. And it becomes a brutally boring and banal experience. So in a sense, you know, you go for somebody terribly surprising. I mean, any of the religious leaders would be very interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like Augustine or, you know.
Yeah, somebody like that.
Someone like that, just in a different, completely different time.
Yeah, yeah. Someone from, oh, that would be so interesting. Jesus.
Yeah.
He'd be fascinating. I'd love to spend
5 days in a room with Jesus
talking about human rights. He'd be knocking it out of the park.
Wow.
And might have been very good in bed. We don't know. Obviously, there's been no investigation or thought about that. But
so final answer,
theories.
Jesus.
No, I think that's a little bit.
No.
I don't know what my final answer is. I'm not going to give you one because I think I've given you quite a lot. Frankly, probably too much.
You've given
as
me
is my wont.
So much. I wish we had a sequel to go into this right now, but I'm afraid I think for now we must wrap up this conversation. Thank you so much, both of you,
Such
Emma and
Daryl,
for joining me. And congratulations on good luck to you, Leo Grand.
Thank you. Love to all you beautiful Empire readers. I'm such a creep.
Okay, so that was Emma Thompson and Darren McCormack, and we'll be talking about Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, in just a few minutes. But first off, it is time to talk about the big release this week, which is the latest film from Disney Pixar, and the first Disney Pixar film to get a theatrical release in some while, and it is Lightyear, which is, what they're saying, the definitive origin of Buzz Lightyear, or how... It's a definitive origin of the toy of Buzz. No, it's a definitive origin of the... It's very confusing. It's very clear in the movie, which is more clear than it has been in the marketing of this movie. The first 10 seconds of this film clear up very, very nicely. Sophie Butcher is here.
Hello.
Hello, Sophie. Because James, being negligent, and Helen, being absent, have not seen Lightyear. So Sophie is here to talk about this movie. Tell us, Sophie.
Yeah, so as you say, there's been a bit of confusion about this one from the start, from when it was announced. Is it a completely separate spin-off? Is it about a real astronaut in the Toy Story universe?
Which is kind of how it seemed to be at least interpreted whenever it was first announced.
Yes, that it was, the toy had been based on a real astronaut and this was a film about that person. But yeah, the film, as you mentioned, does a really nice job of summing up what it's actually about with a title card, which says that in 1995, a boy called Andy got a Buzz Lightyear toy And the toy was based on a movie, and Lightyear is that movie. Mm-hmm. So it's about a fictional...
10 seconds, you're done. Yeah. Yeah. Like, just say that 2 years ago.
I don't know why they didn't just say that in all the marketing there's been for the film. Yeah, so it's cleared up. It feels much clearer when you're going into it. But yeah, to get into the story itself. So we meet Buzz and his fellow Space Commander Alicia Hawthorne, who's voiced by Uzo Aduba. Buzz is obviously voiced by Chris Evans, a little actor called Chris Evans that we might have heard of.
Never heard of him.
No.
Not Tim Allen.
No. Which also makes, it still adds to the confusion, even though it's being cleared up, because wouldn't the toy be voiced by the person?
Not necessarily.
Not always.
Tom Hanks's brother voices Woody toys, apparently. Mm-hmm.
So Chris Evans is Tim Allen's brother. That's extraordinary. Yeah. I had no idea.
I don't think that follows from one example.
That's what I heard.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we meet Buzz and Alicia, and they wake up from their they're like asleep, which Buzz actually mentions in Toy Story, like a cryogenic sleep, and they wake up with this new mission that they have to go on, explore a new planet which is full of these creepy vine like aliens and stuff. And basically they end up getting away from that, and they're trying to fly their ship, and it crashes, and that maroons Buzz and Alicia and the rest of the crew on this brand new planet. And Buzz feels like it was all his fault. And the rest of the film is essentially about him trying to get them home, mm-hmm. finish the mission so that they can be space commanders again.
Indeed. Let's leave it there. And we'll get into all this stuff because we are doing a Lightyear spoiler special. And I interviewed the director, Angus MacLean, and the producer, Galen Sussman, earlier on this week. And there's a lot of stuff to talk about. There's some pretty big revelations. There's some pretty big thematic swings that are going on here, naturally, because it's a Pixar movie. What I find really interesting, without, again, getting into the meat of the plot, mm-hmm. it's a film that has a message that I think is quite unusual for a movie that is quote-unquote aimed at kids, which is that it's okay to fail. It's okay to fuck up, but you have to come to terms and live with your failures.
Yes. Yeah, that's an ongoing thing that Buzz has to try and live with, a mistake. Other people make mistakes, they have to live with it. He has to sort of stop beating himself up about it. But yeah, it flings you into some space action, as you would expect. There's lots of hijacking this ship and, I don't know, stealing this suit, and it moves along at quite a pace. That was one of the things that made this not really sing for me, was that it felt a bit messy, a bit chaotic. Sometimes you never quite knew what ship you were on and where you were trying to go at any one time. And it really, it thrusts you into the context I described in the plot without really giving you any background as to where Buzz has come from, what world they came from, what that world was like, what they're trying to get back to. And so you never really feel invested in his mission to get home. That was a problem that I had with it. I don't know about you, Chris, but...
Yeah, and it's an interesting one, this movie, in that it ticks all the boxes, hits all the right areas. Mm. It's got action aplenty. It's got loads of wisecracks and quips and laughs.
It's very like gag heavy. Like they're pumping them out. Like
And it looks amazing. It looks absolutely spectacular.
Really beautiful.
Phenomenal film in that regard. And it moves along at a fair old lick. And yet I felt that, and maybe a second viewing will change this, but it felt to me like it was perhaps the coldest Pixar movie in some while. And I'm not saying that every Pixar movie has to be warm and fuzzy and has to make you feel all the feels. And it certainly tries to make you feel all the feels. I don't think it quite gets there. I wonder if part of that is that Buzz Lightyear himself is a very strange character. A character that I think is very, very hard to get to grips with. And very hard to relate to, despite, you know, the fact that I can relate to numerous things that he does, which is, you know, he fucks up loads and he's a control freak who can't let go. So those are things I directly relate to. Yeah. But... despite that, I just felt that he's still a cipher for me.
Yeah, and he's not really developed beyond those things, beyond being this kind of cocky astronaut, which is how we meet him in toy form, in Toy Story. He thinks he knows best, etc. You know, he grows in that film, but here, yeah, the depth of his character isn't really there. And when they're pinning the whole film on him as a character, as that piece of IP, that's when it starts to feel cold. That's when it starts to feel a bit cynical to me. It's very important to point out there's a very cute robot cat in this film called Socks, which was honestly the highlight of the film for me. That might sound really immature.
Socks is great.
He's a great like source of humour. Again, it's that kind of animal companion thing that Pixar likes to do. And yeah, there's plenty of laughs to be had. There's plenty of fun to be had. It does, like Chris says, looks beautiful, the way Pixar have depicted space. But yeah, there was just something quite missing. And when you compare it to things, something like Turning Red, you're wondering, why is this in the cinema and Turning Red isn't? And it's because it's got a name that people recognise. And that feels a little, that's a bit of a shame to me,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I can see that. I really hope that this is the beginning of the Disney giving Pixar the respect they deserve and giving them cinematic releases again. There's not going to be a Pixar film for another year until Elemental comes out next
year. Which sounds like going back to
Inside Out and all that sort Pixar, of really high concept stuff. Yeah. So, listen, enjoyed this. Had a very, very good time with it. But it is not, for me, top level Pixar.
No.
And we gave it 3 stars and I'm on board with that. But I am looking forward to getting into it in the spoiler special. Once you guys see it, we'll record that. And
can't wait. And
have a bit of a chit chat about it all. Okay, well, Sophie's gone. Look at that, the magic of podcasts. People can just portal in, portal out again. We should talk about portals. And we should talk about Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. My God, that's a good segue. Helen, you've been away, but I haven't lost my segue in powers.
Wow, just amazing.
Hell's bells.
Yes, so this is the story of a woman who is starting over late in life. She's a retired teacher. She's been widowed, and she's played by Emma Thompson. And she has decided that after being with only one man her entire life, it is time to try some stuff. And accordingly, she has hired a handsome young sex worker known as Leo Grand, played by McCormick, to help her find the sexual satisfaction she has that was always missing in her marriage and that she's never really explored before. So, you know, she has heard all of these terms. She's aware of all of these things, but she's never had the chance to experience them because her late husband was very much a sort of, let's say he didn't put her pleasure first and foremost. So she goes, basically this is a series of meetings in a hotel room between Thompson's character and McCormack's character. And there are discussions about aging, there are discussions about sex, of course, there are discussions about relationships, trust, openness, bodies, what we can expect from each other as people. And I just thought it was brilliantly, brilliantly played. It's very, very funny a lot of the time, but also incredibly moving at times. There's real pain in both their stories, both their past, and also kind of real hope for their future. So it's a really, I just find it a fascinating, fascinating story. It doesn't get into too much into the sort of, the politics of sex work and that kind of thing. There's nothing in there. I mean, in a way, maybe that's unfair because if this had been between an older man and a young woman, I think there probably would have been more discussions about the power politics involved. As it is, they sort of, they touch on that but don't dwell on it. Maybe that would have been worth going into a little bit more. But even as it is, I think it's a really, really interesting look at sexuality and sexual exploration and getting your confidence at whatever age.
And a bold choice by Emma Thompson to do it. Now, this has got like sex scenes, nudity, all sorts of stuff, which she said she's not been asked to do previously.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's funny because it is coy about some of that stuff for a certain wind of the running time. And then it's really not coy.
Bangles all over the place.
Quite. It really goes there. But by that point, you almost feel like it's earned its sex montage, if you will, you know, it's earned that sort of moments of connection or whatever it is. Certainly physical pleasure for her, given what you learn about her life and what she's been through.
See, Lightyear doesn't earn his sex montage.
You know, a lot of films...
Out of place.
A lot of films just have gratuitous sex montages. This one is absolutely non-gratuitous.
And they left their socks on.
While being hilariously gratuitous at the same time.
Good luck to you, Buzz Lightyear.
But honestly, I think it's a fascinating film about something that you just don't see, which is older women's sexuality. And and really, that's what it's about. It's not about, you know, it's not watered down. This is not a subplot in somebody else's story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very much front and center. And fair play to everybody involved.
Full front and center.
Full front and center, indeed.
No, there's some incredibly brave places it goes to. Brilliantly written.
Really well written.
By Katie Brand. And really well directed as well by Sophie Hyde. I thought this was terrific. Really isn't a lot more to say beyond that. I mean, you do see why he's called Leo Grand, not, say, Leo Short or Leo Demi. But, and yes, I did have to Google Starbucks cup sizes to make that work. She's terrific. He's terrific. And it's one of those movies that I think might be off-putting to people because it is so...
Well, it's dealing with taboo subjects, yeah.
Well, yeah, but also that, but also it's not It is cinematic, which is interesting, I think. But it, you know, it could easily be a stage play as well. Yeah, I thought it was terrific. And we gave this one four stars then to Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. Last but not least this week, we have the new film from Joseph Kosinski, the director.
Wait, didn't we do that already?
Oh, that's right. Yes, of course. The director of Top Gun Maverick.
I see what you're doing here.
What are we doing here? I just meant because he did Top Gun. We did his new film like 2 weeks ago.
That's what you're doing here.
Yeah.
See, I understood that reference.
what am I doing?
I don't know.
Carry on.
What am I doing?
Spiderhead.
And his amazing friends. Greetings, Spiderhead fans.
Should I just talk about this film?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
He's back.
Which is, and crucially, the body of a spider and the mind of a Hemsworth. That's what this is. This is, Helen's just rolling her eyes at this point. Fair enough.
I think Helen would prefer the other way around. The body of a Hemsworth and the mind of a spider.
I don't think that would be fun either.
It would be amazing. Chris Hemsworth?
Because he'd try to eat you after sex.
Yeah, it'd be, so. No.
No. James, you're meant to eat people before sex. Again, this is why I've won a sex award.
Clearly, and not a Best Helen award. Right, anyway, this is a film.
I've never tried a Best Helen.
Steady. This is a film. This is a film. I use inverted commas around the word film. But this is based on a short story published in The New Yorker, written by George Saunders, Escape from Spiderhead, and it also stars Miles Teller as a convict at a very, very cushy prison, which is a little bit like a sort of a Nordic spa resort based in a Bond villain's lair. And the idea is that they can get out of, you know, Gen Pop and their normal prison, and they can go to this sort of spa retreat, whereupon they are experimented on using drugs. So the pharmaceutical company run by Chris Hemsworth, whose name is just Steve, and Steve does...
Abnesty.
Yes, that's true. But they all refer to him as Steve. But Mr. Abnesty, Helen, is his dad. He wants to be Steve. He's cool, Steve. And Steve puts them in a room, talks to them, and uses a variety of drugs. Some make them laugh, some make them fall in love, others make them paranoid and upset, some make them afraid, and it's a big sort of pharmaceutical test. Now, the short story is quite pointed and extremely bleak, with no fat on it, and it's actually kind of cool. This is something that's been very, very fleshed out to fill a feature length, and also to fit a cinematic format. They've kind of softened, they've rounded off the edges, they've softened it, they've taken all the bite out of the story, to be honest. We gave this 3 stars. I'm just jumping beyond here. I think that was rather generous of Nick DeSalmon, to be perfectly honest with you. I did not think this was a 3-star film. I struggled with this one. I really did. Like, it's got some good performances in it. Miles Teller is a lot of fun in there. Journey Smollett is in it as a character called Lizzie. She's good too. I thought Chris Hemsworth, who, and I can't emphasize this enough, I absolutely love in everything, is catastrophically miscast in this particular role. I didn't think it worked at all. And the way the character is written in the short stories is much more sort of overtly sinister, where here he's a bit of a kind of tech dude bro, like everybody's pal, but a little bit sort of like, he almost has a bit of comedy Thor in his character here, and it didn't sit very well with me. And I just felt that this, it didn't do anything new. It felt like an episode of Black Mirror, but an hour and a half long. And it's like, we've seen this kind of stuff before. It's not really clever. It's not doing anything groundbreaking. It's not saying anything new. And there's a couple of shocking moments. There's some shocking violence in it, which kind of comes out of nowhere. But I just think what it was doing, it's incredibly predictable. And by the time the end, you're like, well, that's a thing that happened.
I think there's good moments in it. I think there's some good ideas. I didn't think Hemsworth was miscast because I see what they were kind of going for with that one. But he's very much how tech bros like to think they are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And absolutely the opposite.
But it's just like they put some glasses on Thor. That's essentially what they did here.
Essentially, yes. And he's so well-groomed and you know, smiley and handsome and everything, of course, that it's like, dude, that's not how you look to everyone else. Just FYI here. but, you know, I think there's a good notion here. I think it suffered from some weird inexactitudes. So there was stuff that wasn't very clearly laid out that I thought would have benefited from a little bit more explanation. Like, there's a word, the word Darkenflux is used a huge amount.
So many times.
But they don't really explain what it is or what its point is or why it exists in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing. You're like, well, if you explain to me what this is and why, then I will be more impressed by you.
Well, I think you kind of get there. You kind of understand towards the end, don't you? The reasons for these things.
Yeah, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have an in-universe sort of explanation clearly enough. I think some of the stuff was just a little bit muddier than it needed to be, and I think that's where it loses interest.
It thinks it's a lot smarter than it is, this film. Like, yeah, it thinks it's being quite profound and a bit risky.
I do think it needed to be sharper than it is, certainly. But yeah, we give it 3. I don't think that's unfair. Mm.
I'd give it 2. And there's a character in this called Shitfinger, who writes things on the wall in shit. And had I been the one reviewing it, that's possibly how I'd have done it.
Wow, that seems harsh.
Okay, 3 stars in for Spiderhead. There are a couple of other films we want to mention very quickly in Dispatches. James is furious because he's only seen 2 films in his life. One of them is Last Seen Alive, the new Jerry Butler film.
That is Last Seen Alive. It's not very good. I was watching it. I was so engrossed in it. I got on the wrong train this morning and nearly ended up on the coast.
Well, that sounds like it's good then.
No, I just wanted to see what happened. It's one of these films where it's a 2-star film, but I actually had more fun with it than I should have done. By the time it gets to the end, you're like, this is not a good film. But it's surprisingly consistently tense. As Jerry Butler, a guy whose wife, played by Jamie Alexander, is abducted at a gas station, and he has to try and find her, and no one believes she's missing, and he's searching for her, and it's all very stressful. But it's not as terrible as it sounds. It's the best I can say.
But that sounds great.
Made me miss a train, James Dyer, Empire.
Made you miss a train, consistently tense.
Yeah, it is Butler. Consistently tense. It goes to some silly... It's very unoriginal, and it gets a little bit silly. It's a bit where the camera literally pans across something that says, highly flammable, and then obviously blows up 2 minutes later.
Great.
It's not sophisticated.
All right, I don't think we've got an official review of this, but it's a Jerry Butler film, so therefore...
2 stars.
300 stars for this. Last Seen Alive. And Helen?
Yes, Tout s'est bien passé, a.k.a. Everything Went Fine, which is the new film from François Ozon. It premiered in Cannes last year. Sophie Marceau stars as the grown-up professional daughter of a man who has a stroke. And even when he wakes up, even though he appears to be on the road to recovery, he's like, I am not up for this life of being, you know, limited and getting older and getting weaker. I just want to go to Dignitas, basically, and end my life. And it's the dilemma that presents for his family. Despite that, it is kind of a comedy at times. A lot of the time it's very funny, but it's also dealing with stuff that, again, we don't talk about a lot: aging, infirmity, you know, long-term serious illness before death and the effect that has on you and your family. And then, of course, you know, the right to die, the choice of dying. So it's, I know that sounds horrifically depressing, but genuinely quite a life-affirming film in a strange way. I thought it was really clever. I'd probably go, we haven't got an official Empire review. For me, it'd be, say 4. It's a low 4, high 3 probably, yeah.
All right, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything went well.
Everything went fine.
Yeah, everything went fine. Sorry, not to be confused with Everything is Awesome.
No, or Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Or Everybody Wants Some.
Oh, no.
2 exclamation marks.
That's a good film. I need to watch that again.
Yeah. 4 stars in for Everything Went Fine. There you go. I've seen all of that director's works, except for this one. Hey. This is a pretty big hole in my ozone layer.
Wow.
He's one of our fit directors, isn't he?
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
Is he?
I think so.
This is how much of a rush we're in. We're now Googling the fitness
of
this director.
I know, but real quick.
Unbelievable. Here I am, sit down, watch fucking 90 minutes of Jerry Butler for you, and...
Francois Ozon, no.
No, I saw a good picture from earlier, which...
He looks like a golfer. No.
Come on.
No. Disqualified. Disqualified. Tom Gormigan, director of Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Well, I'm wrapping it up. You take a look. All right. So on that note, that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Welcome back, Helen. Next week, we might actually talk about films.
Hooray.
What a novel concept that will be.
Gormigan will give you.
All right. Well, thank you. Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by...
Remember, we're in a rush.
Let the record show Chris is doing an Elvis impression.
I thought he was having a seizure.
Austin Butler.
Uh-huh.
Who plays Elvis in Elvis.
All right.
Thank you very much. Elvis is out of the building.
Very good.
Until a auspicious occasion, until we meet again, it is time to say goodbye to my 2 colleagues of such lethal cunning, Heather O'Hallam and...
Toodaloo.
And Ben and Donna Dyer.
Ben and Donna Dyer.
Goodbye. Listen James to Violet Dyer. TV podcast. Bye.
Beep, 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 beep. Live beeping. Live censoring right here. You know, if we get it just right, we can actually time this right. Say it again.
No.
Do it again, quick. Beep. You motherfucker. You motherfucker. All right. And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to deep fry my kebab. Lats. How you win a sex award in Scotland. Good Thanks one. For listening. See you next week. Less is goodbye.